Well, I was thinking about something, but it didn't quite make it into a meditation. So I'll just talk about it for a while and then we'll have satsang. So, in the Gita, at the beginning of the Gita, Krishna says there are two paths, one called pravritti, the other called nivritti. Pravritti means, how that's used in this sense is for the samsari. Again, talking within the Vedas, the dharmis, a person who's a samsari, basically is following the path of pravritti. Pravritti means I'm pursuing my happiness. I'm pursuing my happiness for the fulfillment of by fulfilling different desires, raga dveshas, my likes and dislikes are there and important to me, because what I like in my mind means what I like will give me happiness. If I'm able to gain what I want, what I like, that will give me happiness. If I can avoid what I don't like, my dveshas, that also will give me happiness, right? Either the pursuit of what I want or the getting away from what I don't want for the sake of gaining happiness. So that's the path of pravritti. Nivritti has to do with the mumukshu, the one who has recognized that every gain by its nature is bound by time. If it's something that I can gain, it means it was not there previously, and therefore it's subject to change. Subject to change, it's bound by time, and therefore will come to an end. And so with that realization, I gain vairagya, I gain a dispassion toward fulfilling my ragas and dveshas, my likes and dislikes, my desires. I gain a dispassion because they can only give me momentary glimpses of what I actually want to be. I don't want just a glimpse that comes and goes. I actually want to be whole and be complete. And I see the impossibility of that in the world, of gaining that in the world. I have nothing against gaining things. It's only when I superimpose any type of lasting ananda or fullness on those gains. And so once I've realized that the ananda that I seek, the wholeness that I seek, is not something that can be gained from the world, then I'm going to be looking elsewhere for that. I'm going to become a seeker for that. Because it's not like I can say it's all right for me to be unhappy. I know what it's like to be happy. It's just that that experience is momentary. And I also realize that it actually shouldn't be momentary, because that's when I feel most like myself. In the Katha Upanishad, Lord Yama, talking to Nachiketas, again talks about that twofold path, in terms of Shreyas and Prayas, where Prayas is my seeking for pleasure and completion in the world by fulfilling desires, and Shreyas is seeking that absolute good, one that's not bound by time. Pravritti again, pravritti, nivritti. So say I am a mumukshu or a jnani. I have viveka and I have vairagya. I have that discrimination, seeing everything as time-bound and therefore not producing any type of lasting result. and knowing what I want. Is to gain happiness itself, ananda itself, not a projected ananda. I want to be happy. I don't want to run after happiness. Happiness, I want to be happy, means I want to be whole, complete. Because I know that's who I am. I have many fleeting experiences of that self. And I know that's the truth. I know that's who I'm supposed to be. I just can't hang on to it. And now I know that the world can't give me that. Because the world is time-bound and can only give me fleeting experiences. That's not what I'm after. So I become a mumukshu, a jignyasu, somebody who wants to know. I become a mumukshu, I gain a teacher. I'm exposed to this knowledge. I gain this knowledge. I recognize this body, mind, sense organs. My body, mind, sense organs. Even the ahankara. All the moods, emotions, memories. All my experiences. I recognize them as being Ishwara. Belonging to Ishwara. Like the dream character recognizing that every part, every part of his or her experience the body, the mind, the sense organs, the reactions, moods, emotions, every experience. Is part and parcel of the dream, belongs to the dream. Is taken care of by the dream. I recognize that this life is taken care of by Ishwara, belongs to Ishwara, is part and parcel of Ishwara's story. I can be ignorant of that fact, but that doesn't change the reality of it. I recognize my own being, the self, myself. As being the self of Ishwara, the self of the whole, this body, mind, sense organs, is part and parcel of the whole of Ishwara. And the self that I am is the self of Ishwara. As I recognize myself, the Atma, my being, I see that I am not a knower or a doer or a perceiver or a thinker. Those actions all belong to the upadis, the body, the mind, the sense organs. The eyes see, the mind thinks and feels, the body acts. But me, conscious being, I simply am self-evident. I'm not a doer. I'm not a thinker or a feeler. I simply am self-evident me. The self-evident me. That is the self of Ishwara, the self of all beings, the self. This me is the self of Ishwara. For me, for Ishwara, Ishwara's self, which is myself, there is no time. There is no past. There is no future. I simply am. I have not become, and I will not become anything other than what I am. There is no past. There is no future. There is only self-evident conscious being, which is me. There is nothing for me to do or to achieve. I simply am. But here is this body, mind, sense organs. What is there for me to do from the standpoint of this body, mind, sense organs? For me, there is nothing to do. But what about this body, mind, sense organs? Who does it belong to? Who does the dream character belong to? The dream character belongs to the dream. To the Ishwara of the dream. So since this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishwara, I simply do what presents itself to be done to the best of my ability. This body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of Ishwara's story. I do, to the best of my ability, what presents itself to be done. That is the path of Shreyas, Nivritti. Internally abiding as myself, externally abiding as part and parcel of Ishvara. Externally means within Maya. Internally, I mean the Atma, the self. Which is Brahman, it's me. Being myself. Being myself, the body, mind, sense organs being Ishvara, part and parcel of Ishvara. I do what is to be done, what the universe presents to me to do. When my mind is imagining in the future or worrying about the past, I bring my mind back to the present, to what is here to be done now, what is being asked of me now. I sit with myself. Anyone have anything on your mind? Virginia asks, can you say a few words about guilt? When is it useful, not useful? I don't know if I would talk about guilt in terms of being useful or not useful. I think guilt, and I think I've mentioned this before also, Swamiji once talked about guilt as something that you really can't get rid of. You might not be carrying it around with you all of the time, but if you've done something that you feel guilty for, you may always feel guilty about that or bad about it. You don't feel, you, whatever it was that was done brought about the karma pulla of that guilt feeling. And so I think it's something that you kind of have to accept. You can try to make amends, you know, or you can say prayers to some prayaschitta karma, some sort of prayers to try to neutralize it. But I think basically kind of just has to be accepted as a fact. And I, after Swamiji more or less said that, I looked in my own life, and there's a handful of things I feel guilty about that go even, there's even something I did when I was like 18, 17 or 18. I feel, to this day, I feel guilty about it, even though I don't think about it very often. But if I do think about it, a guilt accompanies the thought. See what I mean? So, and I don't think it's not going to accompany the thought. I think that it's not something that necessarily goes away, so it's just something you have to accept and honor and feel in a way that we all make mistakes and do things, you know, in life. I don't think there's, unless you're a sociopath or your psyche is not capable of having that feeling of guilt, there will be things, you know, there'll be things. And I think it's better that to have that feeling to feel guilty about the things that warrant that. And it's not something that your ego decides to feel guilty about either. It's just a karma pulla. It's something that rises with the action. So I would just take it prayerfully and know that we're not perfect, and we do our best. And there are some things that we could have done better in hindsight. That doesn't mean you could have done it better then, but in any case, it produced guilt. I think it's a really kind of an interesting meditation to think of it as how Swamiji was talking about it, that it's something that just never goes away. And he was, I'm sure, talking about his own experience, because I don't think any of us can go through life without anything that we feel some guilt over. It's just we're not obsessing on it or carrying it around in your conscious mind, you know, obsessing on it all of the time. But when you think of those instances, guilt will accompany the memory. Yeah, welcome. Just look though, I would say, Virginia, just look at whatever the things are that you feel guilty about and see if that's true. I think it's kind of like a law that guilt will be associated with that memory. And it probably doesn't help to try to rationalize it away, because if the guilt comes, it probably has some validity. It'd be nice just to analyze it without trying to analyze it away, just try to see it for what it is. One thing is that the Atman doesn't have any guilt. Yeah, those feelings all belong to, all exist within the creation. If you feel guilty about not feeling guilty, but then I don't think that you have a choice about feeling guilty or not guilty. You feel guilty when there's something to feel guilty about. Yeah, Dunya says it seems to me that there really is no knower, only the known, right? Then the ahankar can come up in and say, I know this or that. Yeah, exactly. The ahankara comes in and says, it identifies itself with consciousness in reference to the object which is known. And then instead of saying it is recognizing that it is the knownness which thing that the known knows, the things that the knownness that the known enjoys, it just says, I am the knower. It's kind of a false. It's a false stance. There really is no knower, but I can see how that happens. You identify with the mind, or you identify with the sense organs, and you become the subject, and the other thing becomes the object. But you don't realize that the subject is known and the object is known. Free will and all of that exists within duality. But actually, free will, if you look at free will more like a muscle or a capacity, but that it's taking place so much within the prarabdha. So you have what we call free will, but free will is taking place within the prarabdha karma. You can't get rid of, and don't want to get rid of free will completely. But actually, for a jnani, the free will doesn't come much into operation because it's not really necessary. But it can come into operation, and that's where you're kind of beating your head against the wall. The jnani doesn't use much free will because it's more like responding. Instead of using my will, I'm responding to what is to be done. So all doership is in the realm of mithya, yeah. I don't see how that is more real than knowership. I don't quite understand what you mean there. Free will, all of that, the doer, and all of that is all within mithya. I don't see how the teachings are saying it is more real than knowership. So, Danya, you see, because knowership doesn't really exist at all, it is a fallacy. Well, in a sense, it doesn't exist at all, but when you're within mithya, there is a knower and a known. That division is made because of the sense organs and the mind in relationship to the objects. But how it doesn't exist is experientially. Experientially, there is no experience of a knower. There's only the experience of known. But then the experience of known requires an instrument of knowing, you know? And so we make that construct. And doership, I don't really see. I see that that's an interesting comparison you're making between doership and knowership. But I kind of, in a way, think it's like apples and oranges, you know? Like my feet walk, my hands grasp. These are the karmendriyas, you know? My voice speaks. Yeah, let's talk about it later. Danya, I mean, there's a collective karma for a race of people, but some races, like Native American Indians, Aboriginal people in Australia, were very dharmic people, but they were treated very badly by the Europeans. Is there a reason why dharmic races are treated so badly? Well, because there's adharmis in the world, right? There's always a war going on between Dharma and Adharma. Even if you go way back into the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, there's always a war between Dharma and Adharma. Look at how the Pandavas were treated. They were treated horribly by Duryodhana and his crew, so unjustly. Adharma is unjust. The problem that we're all having, the Westerners are having, is we're realizing that we're really the adharmis. See, is there a reason why dharmic races are treated so badly? Well, with any race, there's going to be dharma and adharma, but say, it's a dharmic race. They're not going to be behaving toward others in an adharmic way. And so it's the adharmis that are going to be the aggressors, not the dharmis. But there should be a reason for the dharmic people to suffer. Yeah, maybe in terms of the collective karma over long periods of time. Like you could be, for instance, if say if you take it individually, you can be a person who's very committed to dharma. But in this loka, it's going to be 50-50. You're not going to be, when you have beginningless lives, you're not going to be free of papa. You know, and so there'll be opportunities for you to suffer. Even though you're a dharmi. Look at how much Swamiji suffered. He was such a dharmi in so many ways. And he just said, well, we get what we deserve. You can also say, just to throw another little wrench in the. Is that there is abuse of free will. Yeah, Swamiji would say there that they say even a dharma and disorder is in the order. That's right, everything is. Nothing can get outside of it. But then the adharma is very punishing also, and that's all part of the order. Okay, everybody, why don't we call it a night?